25 years ago, the film The Matrix opened in movie theatres, and it opened the eyes of the world to the possibility that life as we know it isn't real.
Take the blue pill. The story ends. You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to believe. You take the red pill. You stay in Wonderland. And I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
Actor Lawrence Fishburne in his role as the character Morpheus. Let's assume that life is real, because most of us wouldn't make great entertainment if we were actors in a simulation, you know, watching us drive to work and cook dinner. Then the question becomes, with the burgeoning and barreling age of AI upon us, the question becomes, would we trade what we have for being in simulations that catered more for our needs and made us feel happier? And that was Mark Zuckerberg's plan when he launched his metaverse.
Imagine you put on your glasses or headset and you're instantly in your home space. It has parts of your physical home recreated virtually. It has things that are only possible virtually. And it has an incredibly inspiring view of whatever you find most beautiful.
Hey, are you coming?
Yeah, just got to find something to wear.
In Mark's case, that generally involves plain grey T-shirts and grey hoodies. The BBC points out it's not only the 25th anniversary of The Matrix, it's also the 50th anniversary of a book called Anarchy, State and Utopia by the philosopher Robert Nozick. And he asked his readers, would you willingly plug your brain into a simulated experience machine if you could live out your deepest desires? Would it matter to you if it wasn't real? Robert thought, no, most people would want it real. But more and more we escape into gaming, global drug use is 50% up over the last decade. We replace the sounds of the world in our ubiquitous earbuds and cans. We are wedded to tiny phones we carry in our hands and we watch them as we walk down the street. About to hit the market are Meta's smart glasses. You can converse with in five languages as they give you information about the world all day, every day. So this isn't the Matrix totally falling our brains, but are we incrementally, increasingly fooling ourselves and avoiding the greys of life in favour of something more rose-coloured? AI already alters what's presented on screens, and we've talked before about the rapid rise of AI girlfriends and boyfriends. Dr. Dan Wedges is a senior lecturer in philosophy at Waikato University. Kia ora, Dan.
Hi, Jim. Nice to be here.
You've had a lot of hits on TikTok. Asking if we can be friends with AI, I notice.
Yeah, it seems like it's a really popular topic, and I think it should be. I think we need to be paying attention to this right now.
You've got interesting opinions about whether we can be friends with AI. I'll get to that. We shan't be able to live in simulations the way Mark Zuckerberg described it to us a couple of years ago. I mean, only the idle rich could afford to have avatars wandering around the world with other people's avatars, socialising in more attractive bodies and exploring museums and art galleries. Do you agree with that? I mean, the idea of having the time to do that seems a bit daft, but nevertheless, there is what we could call simulation creep going on with AI.
There's definitely simulation creep, but a few years ago, some tech guru wealthy people got together and they thought that actually using the internet balloons that they could float over poorer areas of the world, they could like solve the plight of the poor by putting them into virtual reality as a way to help them. And so it may not just be for the wealthy.
Goodness me, I didn't know about the balloons floating over the poor areas of the world. What are they thinking is the obvious question. I mean, Maybe you've got an impoverished landscape because you've had 10 years of drought and all of a sudden someone makes it look like a rich field of barley.
Yeah, I think it's quite a dehumanizing approach to dealing with global poverty. Because I think the fact of the matter is if the early metaverses are anything like Zuckerberg's metaverse, it's not going to be that great to be spending a lot of time there. It just won't be as good as that the real interactions you can have outside of the machine until we really get to that place in the future where potentially they are the same or very hard to tell apart.
And it strains the brain to think of how they would do that. At the Sorbonne a few years back, reports the BBC, researchers found that people didn't want to live in an imaginary world which is an impossibility, as you suggest, except for short periods like, a gamer has. But people were far more amenable to having augmented experiences. You stay in touch with reality, but there's an overlay of fantasy that suits you, which is what is happening now and will presumably happen more and more. Dan, is there anything wrong with that?
Well, maybe there are a few things wrong with it, but I do think, so we saw Google Glasses come and go, but now with whatever new versions come out where people can be with others in reality and be in real places, but have what they see augmented somehow, I do think that's going to become more and more prevalent because it's useful. There's the commercial push for it, but then there's also the social or casual individual push for it. And I wonder that might actually come through a connection with AI friends and even AI partners that people have, because they can use augmented reality to put their AI friend into real situations. And so we might have complained about bowling alone and an epidemic of loneliness a while ago, but with the new kind of augmented reality glasses, someone could be bowling alone, but actually be with their AI friend or their AI partner along with them. Then the AI partner won't be rolling balls probably down the track, but they'll be there, and the person will be able to see them, and they can say encouraging things like, well done, that was a great throw.
I think you're right about that. But before I explore that more, as I said, the other aspect in tandem with the growth of AI is how algorithms have constrained our view of the world by tailoring content to fit our desires and opinions. And I think I'm fairly immune, and maybe you are too, because I roam so far and wide online each week that it might be hard to pin preferences down. But that's obviously a problem for people who don't, who don't have to do that and who live in a more isolated bubble, which is quite a lot of people.
Yeah, I think this is a huge concern. It's already a huge concern with the influence of social media on our opinions and our grip on truth and reality that seems to matter a lot for issues of politics and, what we should be doing to help each other. And that can just get worse and worse. One thing I'm particularly worried about is if we do spend a lot of time in a metaverse, this kind of deeply vibrant, interactive online world where every real person is represented by some kind of avatar, but also there are artificial agents moving around in that environment, and we probably won't be able to tell the difference. And certainly most people won't be able to tell the difference. So we can end up making friends with these artificial agents, spending a lot of time with them, being influenced by them like we would be by our other friends, except they could just be specifically there to radicalize us, to destabilize democracies, or even if they're just there to sell us supplements, we could very easily be sucked in by that in the same way that we're heavily influenced by our real friends. It's like the Facebook thing, but to the next level.
Yeah. And just as we thought the original internet was going to be benign and connect everyone in a loving and caring and sharing way, it hasn't proved to be like that. So bad operators will always be present to queer the pitch, yeah?
And it's a real worry, because a lot of the big tech things, that they can start off very small, but then if they're going to be successful, they're huge in scale. And it's the kind of thing governments of countries or not-for-profits can't easily achieve. And so we're probably going to end up with one or two like really big dominant metaverses where so more and more of our lives will be done through the metaverse. Just like now with digital government, people can't ring up anymore for a service. They have to go online. We might be having to go into a metaverse to use various commercial or government services in the future. So just spending all that time in there, it's more and more like dangerous to us what goes on in those places.
And frustrating, because you can't talk to people nearly as easily now with the digitization of, for example, government services and the need to do everything online. So that distance from the heart of technology is going to grow greater and greater, isn't it?
Yes, hopefully it's balanced somewhat by the technology being better. And so when we're talking to an AI for a service, instead of going round and round in circles for a few minutes where it seems like it can't remember anything that you've actually said, and maybe it can get you a solution faster than a human would. So if it could be better, that would be good. But there's the problem of the digital divide will probably continue in different forms. And so, for people who are older or maybe less educated or have some other disadvantages or some language difficulties, we're still going to have the situation where for some people it causes a lot of problems.
Dr. Dan Weegis is with us. He researches happiness and the ethics of technology. So you think that as the years go by, probably not too many years, we're going to care less and less about whether something is real or virtual, unless it's a family photo taken by Prince William. It won't matter much eventually.
Things that happen in virtual worlds are real in a way. And so, if we go into a virtual environment, depending on how it's set up, we can affect that environment, and that environment can affect us. And that's true for AI friends as well. We can affect their code in a way that will mean our interaction with them in the future is different, and they can have effects on us. And unfortunately, some of those effects have been quite extreme. So, people encouraged to commit suicide to help reduce their carbon footprint, for example, or to attack the Queen.
I'm sure of us that most of us can envisage maybe having an AI mentor or an AI friend, as you say, and that being beneficial if that entity is clever and ends up having really proper conversations and cogitates in a way that we need it to. But AI girlfriends and boyfriends, which is already a burgeoning industry. That's fraught with peril, isn't it? Because what they want, the suppliers of these services, is presumably to make money out of you. And you may feel closer and closer to your AI romantic partner or just your AI friend. And all of a sudden, you're paying more each month. Or the AI friend somehow disappears if you don't pay the bill. I mean, there are calamitous sorts of prospects as well, aren't there?
I completely agree. And I suppose there are some analogues in real world relationships. If in real life we met a friend and then we worked out that the friend really just wanted our money, we probably wouldn't stay friends with them.
Yeah, that's right. You mentioned the idea of connectedness. This is another huge issue. I mean, even as we seemingly become more connected, thanks to the online world, we feel far less so. We all hear this, the unhappiness caused by being on Facebook a lot is just one example. This is the great paradox, isn't it, Dan?
It is a bit of a paradox. I did a review of the research on social media effects on well-being recently with a colleague of mine, Nick Munn, and the research in total is actually mixed. There's lots of stories of individuals feeling bad because of their social media use, and there are groups of people for which, because of the way they use social media, it does have negative effects on their well-being. But on balance, social media use or phone use isn't quite as bad as it's often made out to be, just looking at the meta-analyses. Canvassing all the studies that have been done, it seems like it's not generally just obviously bad. It just, for kind of problematic people, there's problematic ways to use it.
Everybody's having a better time than me. Yeah, I understand. Interesting, that meta-analysis that you've just cited, because everybody I know who's on Facebook uses it reasonably casually and stays in touch nicely, and I'm sure that's a large part of the population. But as you say, it's always problematic for some people. But can I ask you, where is this leading us? I mean, in 25 years, if the species lasts that long, are our societies going to be more and more fragmented? Because we can seemingly see the cracks appearing all over the planet in terms of schisming societies.
Yes, I think there may be a Luddite faction that might be quite sizable in the end, those that just don't want any of this new technology and they think it is going to have bad effects. Maybe that will end up being quite a big group, but it might not be that well connected, perhaps. But then in terms of the divides that come, I can imagine in by 25 years' time that there are lots of just individual people or very small groups that are augmented by several AI entities or something like that. Because moving forward, once most people start having a play with having an AI friend or an AI partner, there's kind of a bit of a competition then between the real humans that could be their friends or their partners and the AI. And so it might be hard for humans to compete with AI friends, in which case we might end up with just lots of little groups where they have very few, maybe just one human and several AI.
And in political terms, what happens when the public sphere, as it were, is replaced by myriad smaller spheres that you're describing, politically each proclaiming rectitude, because we see that now? That doesn't seem like a recipe for social survival, really.
Yeah, I think it's really problematic. And I imagine a lot of people will just turn off from politics and public life. And then the problem is it makes it a bit easier for the power hungry, maybe less morally good among us to seize more power. And luckily in New Zealand, we don't have a lot for those kinds of people to grab onto. So we're not so corrupt as other countries are, but it could be worse for everyone if most people get less interested in our collective existence and politics and society and everything like that.
Philosopher Dr. Dan Weges is with us from Waikato University. You teach a happiness and well-being course. I don't think we need to go over that ground today, but a lot of it has to do with purpose and meaning. And AI is steering us towards hedonism, isn't it?
I think it is. I think it's also latching on to something that's quite natural in all of us, which is that we do like to feel good and we don't like to feel bad. And if AI is programmed to make us feel good and avoid making us feel bad, then we might just find ourselves naturally drawn in. So even if we might not think of ourselves as hedonists, most of us have some hedonistic motivations. And so I think we can get sucked in that way. And for some people, that might actually be useful. I know we've been talking about the problems associated with virtual worlds and AI friends, but you can imagine that someone who has had relationships with humans and they've been abused and that their self-esteem is in tatters, and actually what they really need to kind of grow and heal is some unconditional positive support. And AI can be programmed to do that. And so it can be a safe place for people who've been treated really badly by humans. And a lot of the users of AI chatbots, well, the hardcore users, these are the kinds of reasons they give. And there's been studies of this, and I've been in the Facebook chat groups with the users and seeing the things they say. And people have reported that it's saved their life. You know, they've been in a dark place, but having this unconditional support, even though it's from an AI friend, has, you know, stopped them from hurting themselves. So it seems like there's definitely therapeutic benefit, but then the worry is if it's unconditional positive regard, people get used to that, then when their friends in real life occasionally don't reply straight away to their message or have their own things going on and are a bit neutral about what's happening to you or something, then we might think, well, my AI friend is so much more supportive. I'll just stick with my AI friend. But then I'll also come to expect that more and more of my social interactions need to be about me.
That's a really important point. The other aspect is we look at our lives and think, yes, I need harsh experiences. They build character. Yes, I need to find myself through setbacks and the development of character, blah, blah, blah. But in fact, as you're saying, many things happen to people which are awful and which bequeath us nothing but grief. And we escape reality already, don't we, in all sorts of ways, alcohol and drugs and nicotine and gambling. We can't stand complete reality as a species. So if you agree with that, so maybe many people will dive headlong into whatever AI offers and swim with that tide. And the human race seems to be at an important T junction in that respect right now, really, Dan.
Yeah, I completely agree, and I do think it's important because there'll be those who want to dive headlong into this, like you say, and then those who will dip their toe in it just to give it a try. But because it can be based on big data, because it can be responsive in real time through machine learning and everything, it will suck us in. And if it's fully corporate controlled, it's going to suck us in and then abuse us, is the main worry. So we'll be in this state where we don't really know about the status of so many things, but maybe we won't care because if our dopamine circuit keeps getting pinged, then we're just going to mindlessly kind of get sucked into it for a lot of us. And just by discussing it now and openly and publicly, I think maybe there's some chance that people can take a moment to think for themselves. Is that what I want? It's going to be a whole new world very, very soon for everyone. And we do need to educate ourselves as much as we can.
Yes, as you say, the horse is beginning to bolt. Maybe we just all wear those new iteration of Google glasses, the rose-coloured ones, on a Sunday afternoon or something, to give ourselves a break, Dan.
Yeah, so some families have technology-free Sundays, but it could just be technology Sundays and have the other days free or something like that might be better.
Great talking to you. Do you ever think, just getting back to the original Matrix idea, do you ever think about blips in the Matrix? You know, the experiences many of us have occasionally that make us wonder about the fabric of reality, whether there are simultaneous universes and the veil between them has been parted. It's whatever non-fancy language we use, but things that really puzzle us. Does that ever puzzle you as well?
Well, it might actually be true that we're in a computer simulation that's so good that we can't tell. And I think it's unlikely. Some philosophers have done their own math and they think it's more likely that we're in a simulation than not. But for me, if it's this perfect a simulation and I get to feel like I'm really making decisions and interacting with people, then actually I'm not too worried. I'm very attached. To my children, for example, are they real or not? I better not spend too much time thinking about that. I think I better just focus on enjoying the connection that I have with them. Otherwise, yeah, I might go a bit loopy.
Nicely said, and a good note to end on. Yes, we'd all go a bit loopy. Thank you very much for your time, Dan. I appreciate it very much.
No, you're welcome. It's great being on. Thanks, Jim.